God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to Disciples View. We'll get to some of the discussions that's occurred in the debate, and I would second, I think, what I heard in the news is that J.D. Vance did something very hard. When you're debating people on issues about which you're passionate, it can be very hard to remain conversational and kind. That was really, really hard. And it's either part of who J.D. Vance is and who God has made him, or something that he's allowed God to make him into. A man who can state plain facts, disagree with a guy like Waltz, and do it kindly. He even disagreed with the moderators kindly when they were, in fact, not moderators, but political activists attacking him, fact-checking one side, when, in fact, their fact checks are fiction. CBS News, just like ABC, should never again be considered for a Republican debate. One day, a Republican is going to figure that out. I wanted to start where we should start, which is with a massive loss of life. And Jesus, no doubt, weeping over this. I don't very often say no doubt if I can't point to scripture, but I can point to Jesus weeping over the death of Lazarus. It was not to be that way. That people weeping, thinking he didn't have the power to restore Lazarus. So much in that sentence, Jesus wept. But we weren't supposed to live this way. It was our decision. This is from the New York Times. It's quite a description and quite an image. For hours, he clung to a tree and cried for help, but no one came. This is Nicole Crane writing the New York Times. Residents in Marshall, North Carolina said they'd never seen the French Broad River rise so quickly or so high. Bruce Tipton, 75, was in his trailer home when it was washed away by Tropical Storm Helene's floodwaters. As his agonized family watched, he slipped into the raging river. To the family of Bruce Tipton, may God comfort you. I can't. We can't. I truly pray that you'll feel the Holy Spirit moving through you, within you, comforting you. I pray that Mr. Tipton knew the Lord. And even in those last seconds, God is so good. He's so magnificent, such mercy. Bruce may have met him then, like the thief on the cross. I'm not comparing Bruce Tipton to the thief on the cross. I'm comparing the circumstance. The circumstance of mercy. There's another reason I wanted to talk about this. And it has to do with institutional capture. I'll explain what I mean here in a second. Mark Robinson is the he's the lieutenant governor of North Carolina. He's running for governor. He posted this on Twitter-X. Joe Biden told the people of North Carolina they had no more supplies for us. I called Franklin County Sheriff White, and he said that's, and he uses a two-letter abbreviation for, let's say, garbage. That's garbage. Franklin County had been running around the clock convoys on behalf of my office since Saturday night. Their deputies have not slept. Their leadership has helped deliver more for the state than I could ever have imagined. They will continue to serve as our central supply center until Western North Carolina is completely self-sustainable. When Joe Biden and the federal government failed to act, Sheriff White and his team took the bull by the horns. And in fact, Mark Robinson worked with owners of private jets to help facilitate these flights. Now, it happens that I am not one who believes that the government can solve all problems. I also recognize this, that everybody pays into FEMA. That is our emergency response system, Federal Emergency Management Association. It should be able to manage things like this, but they have much more important things to do, like relocating illegal immigrants. No, we'll talk about that. That's one of their missions now. Just like the Customs Border Patrol, their role is to get illegal immigrants quickly into the country. The Department of Homeland Security has the same mission. But FEMA? This is an all-hands-on-deck cultural revolution designed to destroy our electoral college and to topple our cities. And look at what it's done here, as no doubt FEMA was distracted, no doubt. When your prime directive is to help illegal aliens into the country, how do you have time to do something as mundane as rescue people like Bruce Tipton, who deserved to be rescued? So did many, many others. Figurehead Biden is on the beach. Kamala Harris was in Hollywood and then posed for a fake photo pretending to talk with people at FEMA. This lady, on the other hand, has loved ones trapped by hurricane-toppled trees.
Do you think the government is doing enough?
Honestly, I don't know how you did not have a formal press conference or something from either President Biden or Kamala Harris. I mean, how do you not say anything for 4 days? They've been stranded for 4 days, and this is the first we've heard from them at all. FEMA is not on the ground there at all. They are not in these cities, not in these towns, and not in these villages.
Does your relative have food? Does she have water? Does she have the medication she needs?
They have a minimal amount of water. They have a minimal amount of food. They were able to get slightly down the mountain to get a little bit of gas, but they haven't been able to cut their way out yet.
When you say cut their way out, what do you mean?
There's trees down. You have to have chainsaws up there to get the trees out of the roads. And that is if the mudslides didn't take the roads out completely. I could not even tell you how many families, even here outside of Charlotte, that are looking for their loved ones up in that area. No one knows anything.
The federal emergency management system is something into which we are all forced to pay because taxation is force. And we're governed at the consent of the governed. Therefore, we're forcing ourselves to some degree. But was there a debate in Congress to turn FEMA into an illegal alien relocation and funding facility or organization? Nope. The stroke of an auto pen. This is from America First Legal. Over the last 4 years, Biden-Harris administration has steadfastly transformed FEMA, the agency responsible for responding to natural disasters like Hurricane Helene, into an illegal alien resettlement agency that emphasizes DEI over public safety. So how do they prove this? I mean, is this just right-wing hand-waving? No, they went to the FEMA website. The Emergency Food and Shelter Program describes that. And within the description, it says this. The program may also receive funding to award to the National Board for Distribution to local social service organizations that provide humanitarian relief to families and individuals encountered by the Department of Homeland Security. That's a way of saying illegal immigrant without saying illegal immigrant. How much of FEMA was devoted to that while Bruce Tipton was drowning? How much of FEMA was devoted to that while that lady's family is trapped with minimal food and water? J.D. Vance spoke of a rooftop, a farm rooftop. Two adults and some children floating by. How busy was FEMA participating in an overthrow of our electoral college system instead of being down there rescuing people? Back to this write-up from America First Legal. The Shelter and Services Program is designed exclusively to provide shelter and services to illegal aliens. Over $1 billion in taxpayers' monies have been allocated between fiscal year 2023 and 2024. Here's some of those monies. New York Office of Management and Budget, $38 million to relocate illegal immigrants, being called refugees now. Pima County, Arizona, $21 million. Catholic Charities, Diocese of San Diego, $19 million. And the list continues. All of this, FEMA. I wonder how many people didn't need to lose their houses. I wonder how many people didn't need to lose loved ones. While FEMA is institutionally captured in this way, Back to America First Legal's write-up on this. Moreover, the Emergency Food and Shelter Program has been reshaped to provide funding for families and individuals encountered by the Department of Homeland Security, also known as illegal immigrants. This is a separate program, $685 million allocated to that. And then, of course, famously, figurehead Kamala Harris, or Kamala, people will write me emails sometimes saying, you're being passive-aggressive, mispronouncing her name. No, I really have a problem with her name. So I'll call her Figurehead Harris. FEMA also identified people of color, women, and LGBT, so-called TQ community as disproportionately impacted by disaster. So according to the people who run Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, white men don't have the same impact when it comes to storms. Even though if you were to do a quick survey, you would find out, they say LGBT, so-called TQ people are. You do a quick survey, you'll find out that they're congregated in urban areas. Not likely to be victims of floods like this or hurricanes like that. How many people were waiting for FEMA relief? Well, FEMA employees were in the process of helping people who came illegally into our country to find a place to live. How many houses were destroyed while other houses were provided for illegal immigrants? Now, we say this, I say this, and we cannot hate either the people doing this or the people who've received this help. We cannot, because Jesus does not hate us. He loves us. He first loved us. We love him, and we're called to love them and to pray for them. But we do get to ask some stewardship questions of Speaker Mike Johnson and every other Republican speaker we'll ever have. When are you going to become less cowardly? When are you going to demand you take power back from the bureaucratic agencies to whom you surrendered it? See, FEMA decided this on their own, no doubt at the direction of the people who run Figurehead Biden. We're not going to concentrate on rescuing people from natural disasters. We're going to concentrate on overthrowing the Electoral College. That wasn't an act of Congress. They decided to do it on their own, and Congress punted that power over to the regulatory arm of government. They create a rule. If it's up there about 90 days, unless Congress pushes back, it becomes law. That's not the way it was supposed to be. We're supposed to be governed at our own consent. But that's all bureaucratic talk. To the people who've lost families in these floods, the aftermath of this, if they knew the Lord, never again will they be cold. Never again will they experience fear or hunger. And I hate to say it this way, but they might not even miss you. They love you. I firmly believe that. God is love. But they also know that you're coming there. To the people who are now politicking on this in a very specific way, claiming that FEMA doesn't have enough money. Have you heard this? FEMA lacks resources. We need to raise taxes. FEMA lacks morality. It's the Federal Emergency Management Association. It is not agency. It is not the Illegal Alien Relocation Agency. It is immoral to lie about your very purpose, because you shall not lie. We will talk about the debates, and then this dear leader of the Longshoremen's Union. What if he knows the Lord? I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back on The Disciples View. Thanks for listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Coming up, I need you to hear from Harold Daggett, the chief negotiator for the International Longshoremen Union, and what he intends to do to all of us. He decided to say it. We didn't decide to say it for him. J.D. Vance last night did something very, very difficult. And tomorrow and Friday, I think Friday we'll dig into this. It's a communication style. And it shouldn't be the case, but it is the case, that style matters more than substance to many, many voters, particularly voters who make their decisions last, undecided voters. It's a frustrating concept for those of us who are really politically invested, but they operate on this rule of it's called the beer rule in Washington, D.C. Who do you want to have a beer with? J.D. Vance won that contest last night, hands down. If you saw the debate, Tim Walz was waving his hands and red-faced and gesticulating and scribbling notes as quickly as he could. And J.D. Vance stood calmly. He addressed people kindly, even as the political agitators pretending to be moderators were fact-checking him and not Tim Walz. When I looked at the media response to this, there was something really fascinating. Nice works. Nice is a phenomenal thing. J.D. Vance did it so well, and we'll dig into that in some detail on Friday. I want to look at the media response to this because nice works. When I was recently traveling to California, I took a new approach with the Department of Homeland Security people who are working at the airport. I don't know what it is in my old age. Someone says it's because I wear a specific type of underwear. I don't want to talk about my underwear. I promise you I'm not Al Gore, who did like to talk about his underwear. But I wear this, and now I get dinged every time I go through security in my groin area, and they have to check me. And I don't like that. That is not fun. So I've taken this new approach. And there was an officer approaching me in the Spokane airport, and it alerted. I knew what he needed to do. And he was, hey, sir, you know, I need to, I saw the alert. I get it. I said, hey, you know what? You don't like this. I don't particularly enjoy it. So how about if you and I decide to not like it together? And he laughed. He said, good. I said, cool. You know, do your job. Do your job. And he did his job. And I said, hey, you know what? If you're going to do something, do it right. I appreciate your professionalism. And he said, you know, thanks. That really means a lot. It's not fun for us either. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it. I repeated the same thing flying out of California. A completely different human being, a far busier airport, and funny thing. It worked. It simply lightened the mood. Guy checking me at that time was a lot younger, had darker skin, far busier airport in San Diego at that time of day, and it worked. His face lit up with a smile. Yeah, I don't like this either. Nice worked last night for J.D. Vance. Nice and smart and calm, having his facts ready, and sitting next to a scribbling, red-faced, angry-looking, agitated Tim Walz, who was obviously lying and obviously trying to get the moderators to do even more to attack J.D. Vance. It was even CNN. CNN said last night that J.D. Vance may be too good on the debate stage for Tim Walz, but everyone roots for the Labrador and not the coyote.
He was hired basically as Donald Trump's designated hitter. Donald Trump is a casting director, and he was convinced that he would be good on TV for him. And this debate is obviously the most important television appearance there is. And, you know, he comes in. We all know, having worked with Van Jones, how these Yale-educated lawyers are very slick.
Easy. You're going to get trigger walls. You keep talking about Yale. He hates that Yale.
But, you know, they have very different personalities. You know, Vance is, you know, he is a bit predatory on that debate platform. And Walz, you know, his strength is his warmth and his everydayness. It's kind of like a Labrador versus a coyote. And the question is, people root for the Labrador, but can he get enough swipes in to keep the coyote off him?
So that's CNN talking about nice. But it was Tim Walz who's supposed to be nice in their eyes. That's not what happened. And the rest of the media caught on to this, and it wasn't always to the pleasure. You would think it would be a happy thing that J.D. Vance was nice on the debate stage. Joy Reid argued that Walz was awkward but relatable and won the debate because of it.
But he said, number one, nothing memorable. There's nothing clippable in what he said. They were just all smooth, bland lies. He got outdone by Tim Walz, who may be awkward. It took him a while to get warmed up, but he won the debate because he actually had substance. He was relatable, and he didn't go in there to slay J.D. Vance. He went in there to show himself, and he showed himself to be bipartisan. He showed himself to be reasonable.
Practical.
He showed himself to be practical. He acted as a governor. And a lot of people are complaining that he didn't knock J.D. Vance out and that he wasn't rhetorically cruel, but that was not his job. It was obvious that his job was to sell Kamala Harris as president. He did that very well. He won the debate.
Wait, so MSNBC didn't see it. How could this be? The body language, the red face, the distorted looks, the hand waving, the ranting. Here's why. The brand must win. The brand is nice uncle. Nice uncles do not let babies that survive abortions die on metal tables. That's not what nice uncles do. This nice uncle empowered that. To watch an event that most of us in this network have seen and you've heard all morning long, of Tim Walz saying, it's not true. That's not how the bill's written. And J.D. Vance saying in a very kind way, what exactly did I get wrong, Governor? Well, it's just not true, but what exactly is wrong? Or J.D. Vance continuing to insist, or pardon me, Tim Walz continuing to exist, that Kamala Harris will be tough on the border. And all J.D. Vance had to say was, but why isn't she tough on the border? And he said it in a kind way. So that was Joy Reid. I wonder what Simone Sanders thinks. MSNBC Simone Sanders was mad that Tim Walz was too nice on the debate stage.
There were so many niceties on that debate stage tonight. I am just kind of like, well, if you agree so much with J.D. Vance, why should they vote for you? I fully believe that Governor Walz went out there tonight and did what was practiced in debate prep. Did what the strategy was that the team put together. That was not the Governor Walz that I had seen out on the campaign trail.
No, the Governor Walz on the campaign trail, Tim Walz on the campaign trail, is a screamer and a yeller. This guy, well, he didn't scream, but he screeched. He gesticulated, he hyperventilated, but they cannot see it. What did the American people see? I think they see networks anymore that are simply ways to amplify emotion. In the analysis, there's no particular fact analysis. Well, here's one. The inflation created by Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the policies, you know what that welcomed? The longshoreman shutdown. How? Because it creates massive, massive pressure on the Americans' abilities to buy what they need, price pressure. It created the perfect timing for the longshoremen to strike, to put our nation at risk. I'm not blaming the people who work on the docks. You deserve a contract for honest work, honest day's work, honest day's wage. What I'm looking at is a union boss who says he's going to do something to us. That's a fact driven by inflation. It makes the timing perfect for this. Here's another one. As they were doing the debate, the storm did come up. J.D. Vance did bring it up. He did recognize the human tragedy. And Tim Walz nodded along with J.D. Vance. But there's no mention of the institutional capture of FEMA. Maybe Nicole Wallace saw something of note in the debate. Well, I'll let you decide. Nicole Wallace argues women wouldn't like J.D. Vance's mansplaining, calling back to the I'm speaking debate moment for Kamala Harris.
Yeah. And I actually think if you're a woman, that might be the worst moment J.D. Vance had, because he was going to mansplain right over that mute button. He was, and again, I don't pretend to know how everyone will react to this. I think that a lot of women in positions of authority that should command respect just by virtue of that dynamic will see themselves in some dude that disrespected them and talked over. I mean, there was a moment like that with then vice presidential in the Harris-Pence debate.
In the Harris-Pence debates, Kamala Harris had rehearsed time and time again, Vice President, I'm speaking. She didn't get to do that with President Trump, of course. So what was it that J.D. Vance was mansplaining? He was stating the fact that Tim Walz signed into law a bill that allows the hiding of any records as to how doctors deal with babies who survive an abortion. Why would you not want records of that? This is a human life. You could argue it even has to do with the safety of the mother. Why would you not want records kept? Because records indicate what people did or didn't do. Since he signed that into law, it has had the effect of people being able, doctors being able to refuse to care for babies to survive abortions. And since that time, 8 little babies have died from exposure or cold or malnutrition. That's what he was pushing back on. Being fact-checked, and Nicole's point about this is that it was women who were doing it. Only women have that ability to speak towards abortion, period, by virtue, and she said it, by virtue of who they are. J.D. Vance is a father. J.D. Vance is a product of having not been aborted. J.D. Vance used to be an embryo and then an infant. J.D. Vance is running to be vice president of the United States. This is a national policy. Of course he gets to comment on it, but he's supposed to sit down when the boss ladies speak. That's the dynamic they put on stage, isn't it? Wasn't that part of the CBS plan? On CNN, Scott Jennings, the sole conservative these days on CNN, it seems, said that J.D. Vance was the clear winner of the debate, calling Walz's performance a meltdown.
It's pretty clear, Vance outclassed Walz. And this guy sitting in the White House Situation Room with that facial expression that's like 50% sheer terror and 50% extreme bafflement. I mean, it was amazing, the split screen difference between a competent Vance and a totally in over his head Walz. The answer on why he lied about his trips to China and the Tiananmen Square thing was probably the worst VP debate meltdown since Stockdale in 92. You know, who am I and why am I here? It was 2.5 minutes of absolute terrible. For Vance, night of redemption. All the political media has told us that Vance was a terrible pick and Walz was going to bring in all these voters. That charade is now over. Walz does not belong at this level of American politics. Vance does. Final verdict, Tim Walz wandered into the wrong bar tonight.
That's a heck of a way to put it. Maybe I'm the one who's just propping up my own bias. Maybe. God has gifted all of us with something. I don't know why he chose me for this, but one of the skills you pick up in corporate America over the years is reading body language, particularly when you present and sell and go into chief executive offices for a living, boardrooms. You pick up on body language. Here's where Tim Walz was at body language-wise. As Skinning said, scared, but something else. Naked. He felt naked. Because for the first time in a long time, he was going to stand back and by a man, his intellectual better, his moral better, who would have just as much time to confront his lies as he had to tell them. Waltz understood perfectly that he can't shift the facts to comport to his lies, so he'd have to continue to scramble the lies he's spoken in order to try to comport them into something that seems like facts. And the Tiananmen Square thing was the perfect example of that. But there was one other thing. You remember that beer rule? That undecided voters make decisions based upon who with whom they want to have a beer. They saw a man stand straight up and down, look into the camera, speak with optimism about America, say things of a personal nature, like my mom had an opioid addiction and she's recovered. On the other side of the split screen, they watched a nervous man, knowing he's intellectually and morally naked, scribbling down notes. With who do you want to have the beer? Or the iced tea? Maybe the sweet tea. We'll come back with Harold Daggett, the chief negotiator for the International Longshoremen Association, and let's talk about his tone and what he says he's going to do to all of us. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples' View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. When we work, we are to work as if we are employed by the Lord Jesus himself and put effort in at that level and to treat our bosses that way, even bad bosses. Not for their glory, but for the glory of God so that people can observe Christians and see us as these people. Peaceable people who seek to be the ones who provide mercy so we can also, of course, know that we'll receive it from a merciful God. We can't earn grace, but we're told he who provides mercy will receive it. I don't know this gentleman. You probably don't either. He leads the Longshoremen's Union, and there's some details that matter, economic details. He's going to talk about their jobs as if he's a longshoreman, and probably he was. And I bet he knows that line of work very, very well. But I'm listening to a man describe the ruin of lives in pursuit of a labor contract, and his men and women should be paid an honest wage for a good, honest day's work. We talked about tone in J.D. Vance's friendly conversational tone in the debate last night, compared to Tim Walz's flailing, hand-waving, ranting tone. How would you describe the tone of this man? This is Harold Daggett, the chief negotiator for the International Longshoremen Association.
These people today don't know what a strike is.
Right.
When my men hit the streets, from Maine to Texas, every single port will lock down. You know what's gonna happen? I'll tell you. First week, be all over the news every night, boom, boom. Second week, guys who sell cars can't sell cars because the cars ain't coming in off the ships. They get laid off. Third week, malls start closing down. They can't get the goods from China. They can't sell clothes. They can't do this. Everything in the United States comes on a ship. They go out of business. Construction workers get laid off because the materials aren't coming in. The steel's not coming in. The lumber's not coming in. They lose their job. Everybody's hating the longshoremen now because now they realize how important our jobs are. Now I have the president screaming at me, I'm putting a Taft Hartley on you. Go ahead. Taft Hartley means I have to go back to work for 90 days as a cooling off period. Do you think when I go back for 90 days, those men are gonna go to work on that pier? It's gonna cost the money, the company's money to pay their salaries. Well, they went from 30 moves an hour maybe to 8. they're going to be like this. Who's going to win here in the long run? You're better off sitting down and let's get a contract and let's move on with this world. And in today's world, I'll cripple you. I will cripple you. And you have no idea what that means.
That doesn't sound reluctant to me. And maybe that's his role to push this. And you'll forgive me. It sounds gangster to me. That's how I receive it. I don't know how you receive it. Now, maybe if I was in the longshoreman, I was looking at life without a contract, maybe I'd be saying, yeah, bud, but that's our gangster. Maybe. Here's a little fact-finding on Harold J. Daggett. He was paid $728,000 to be that way a year, plus $173,000 as president emeritus of a local union branch. That's $900,000 a year. I don't know that longshoremen earn $900,000 a year. Do they? I guess you could find out. In fact, we could look that up. $13 to $19 per hour in Coeur d'Alene. I don't think we have longshoremen here. $50,000 to $79,000 in Washington State. $100,000 in Los Angeles. This man earns nine times the average salary of a longshoreman in Los Angeles, one of the biggest ports in the country. According to Politico, that was the numbers. The New York Times says he owns a 76-foot yacht called The Obsession, and he drives around town in a Bentley. The Telegraph added the Justice Department, which has reportedly lost two cases against Mr. Daggett, has accused him of being an associate of the Genovese crime family, one of the famous five families of the U.S. Mafia. More than 45,000 international longshoremen. The members are going to be striking over three separate locations, 14 Gulf and East Coast ports. Have they taken a look at their lean union leadership? Is this lording power over others? It seems to me to be that. I pray for the people who are working on the shore. It's dangerous duty and it's important. It's vital. But do you want this division? Do you want that man to be your spokesperson? Is that how you view America? You're going to cripple us? Something tells me no. No, because if your union can cripple us, then the next union can cripple you. Let's not be divided. Not that way. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babel.
I can imagine what can be and be unburdened by what has been, you know? What can be unburdened by what has been. There are those who are unable to see what can be. But there are many more who are able to see what can be unburdened by what has been.
Always count on Kamala Harris to make an appearance in The Tower of Babel. Three sound bites here. Kamala Harris went to the Custom and Border Patrol HQ to pretend to care about the officers and their missions.
Then, Vice President, can you share what the agents at the last stop talked about?
They've got a tough job, and they need, rightly, support to do their job. And they work long hours, they're very dedicated, and so I'm here to talk with them about what we can continue to do to support them and to also thank them for the hard work they do.
She likes Customs and Border Patrol agents. She has respect for them. Really? Hey, look what we found. Here's Kamala Harris calling ICE agents the KKK.
Ku Klux Klan, the KKK.
Well, the Klan was what we would call today a domestic terrorist group.
Why? Why would we call them domestic terrorist group?
Because they tried to use fear and force to change political environment.
And what was the motivation for the use of fear and force?
It was based on race and ethnicity.
Right. Are you aware of the perception?
Are you aware of the perception? She started to ask the officer, hoping that he would say no, because then she could put him in a perjury trap because he'd just heard about that perception. This is a host error. My bad. I did not ask for the first sound clip to be played, but it goes perfectly here. She was suggesting, Kamala Harris, that the Department of Homeland Security ICE agents are the Ku Klux Klan. They are domestic terrorists. Well, in a shocking turn of events, we hear this from the Mockingbird Media. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez came right out and reported that Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director sent a letter to lawmakers revealing more than 13,000 migrants previously convicted of homicide are currently free inside the United States.
The Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director sent a letter to lawmakers revealing more than 13,000 migrants previously convicted of homicide are currently free inside the U.S.
Does that sound terrible to you, or maybe terrifying? They've made the decision to bring terror to the streets of the United States, even if not to affect political change in the minds of the people who are homicide, you know, murderers, but very definitely in the minds of the people who are engineering this overthrow of our Electoral College, very much in their minds. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That is called Bidenomics. That is called Bidenomics, and we are very proud of Bidenomics.
That was the Tower of Babbling on A Disciple's View.
I want to just ask a question in this segment. Normally, we do a personal observation. I might tell a story, something I've learned, something I've experienced. In this case, I have a question for you about whether it's okay for me to want apologies from people. You can email me at thetoddhermanshow.com or go to afr.net. Either of those work. thetoddhermanshow.com or go find the email form at afr.net. I was early on in media one of the big skeptics of the COVID lockdowns. I was skeptical the moment they were announced. I have a written record of that on social media being skeptical of it. I was told by my bosses in radio, and it's their radio station. I have nothing disparaging to say. They own the stations, their property, their rules. They told me I could not have commentary on the lockdowns for 3 days. I was simply to repeat government information without commentary. So I said on my program, I have been told to repeat government information without commentary. This is what the government is telling you. 1 day or 2 days or 3 days from now, I'll have a lot to say. So on day 3 days from now, day 2 days from now, day 1 day from now. And on day 0, I came and said, all of this is a swindle. It's all a lie. Here's the proof. If your masks protect you walking into the restaurant, you need them when you're sitting down. That ends the discussion. That's it. And furthermore, it's not a lockdown. They're still letting the buses drive around town. They still have abortion facilities open and pot clinics, marijuana stores open. It's not a lockdown. It's a punishment for certain sectors of society. So here's my question about apologies. There are two news stories I'll relate this to you with. Yet another study has found a link between the mRNA shots that some people still want to call vaccines and serious heart issues. This is a study of more than 950 patients in Madrid, and it found that the combination of these injections and the natural, if you believe it's natural and I don't, SARS-CoV-2 infection was associated with the development of severe heart failure and cardiogenic shock. That's item one. Item two, children who got the mRNA COVID shots died six times as often as kids who did not receive the shots. This is from a very large database. Alex Berenson just wrote this up. The study about COVID and asthma in American kids and teens has gone mostly unnoticed. It hasn't been cited once since it was published in June, which may be why no one raised an alarm over the stunning figures buried in its appendix about deaths among mRNA COVID shot up kids. He wrote vaccinated. They're not vaccines, and Alex knows that. They show that 354 out of 64,000 children and teenagers who received a COVID mRNA injection died within a year after getting injected, a death rate almost six times that of kids per thousand. In contrast, only 309 out of 320,000 kids who were not injected died, fewer than one person in a thousand. Six kids in a thousand versus one kids in a thousand. Now, you see, what is happening here is the evidence continues to pour in that a lot of us were right about these injections, and this is my question. I was called by my boss, a conspiracy theorist. I was told, you have crossed the Rubicon. You're now engaging in daily conspiracy theory, and it's a very dangerous line. And my feedback to my boss was, asking questions is not a conspiracy theory. If I ask a question like, how does causing the body to produce a poison protect the body from poison? And he would say things like, well, it's you saying it's a poison. I said, no, it's not me. The spike protein is the most poisonous part of the virus, and this is what it's causing your body to produce a facsimile of, or this. I had a former colleague write me a note to say, what happened to you? You're such a talented radio host, such a good storyteller. You can be really funny when you want to be. And here you are trading conspiracy theories with people living in dark closets in their mom's basement. I'm ashamed to have known you. Now, I can tell you right now, I feel no anger. I don't. I have deep, deep gratitude towards my former boss. He did so much for me. So much. Deep gratitude. I've had him on my podcast and radio programs because of that gratitude. Am I wrong to want an apology? I've forgiven. I have no emotion tied up in this. I'm asking you, am I wrong for expecting an apology from these people? You can email me at thetoddhermanshow.com. My tendency is I think I'm coveting something that's not mine. I tend to think I'm wrong for wanting the apology. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because He first loved us, we speak His Word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations, until God gives us permission to speak again together. May His peace, which transcends all understanding, rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This is Ben, a Disciples View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.